It's time for your morning pep talk with Jenna Barr and the Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
I get knocked down, but I just keep my head up high, 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 oh, high, high, high. Stuck on the ground, but I just keep my head up high, 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 oh, high, high, high. Keeping my head up high, high.
Good morning, 9:07. You're listening to the Pensacola Expert Panel. It's time to kick off our Tuesday morning with the Garden Line with Mike Wiggins. The gang is back together.
The band is back together. Here we are.
Tammy and Possum.
Absolutely. Welcome back to you.
I told everybody we were going to reference ourselves as that from now on. As long as it's not Tammy and the Armadillo.
Why did you even say the word to start the show off, to have said that, to get us off on the totally wrong track?
Actually, have your armadillo friends come to visit you again?
I haven't seen him. I saw him one time.
Okay, that was once was enough.
He went to my neighbor's, has yet to return.
He went to the airport and took a flight somewhere else to Texas.
I hope so.
So what's been going on, Mike?
Well, it's August and it's hot. And we're kind of between seasons, quite frankly. But so what we're going to have to talk about, probably to start the show, is your least favorite topic. But it's very, very timely for people with St. Augustine grass. It's really important that people take note. I have never seen in my yard, which is St. Augustine, I mow it very high. It's very lush. It's been a great year for my lawn and for most people's because of the rain. I mean, you can't substitute for rain. And so it's very lush. But I can walk through my yard, Jenna, and the little dingy brown moths are, I have to knock them out of the way. They are everywhere.
They're popping up.
They're in the flower bed in some monkey grass areas. You just go and kick the monkey grass and they flutter up. So,
is that because of all the rain? Are they just gravitating towards those moist areas?
It's a time of year.
Okay.
But you got to keep in mind that because our lawns are so lush, that I think we're going to have a problem here probably in the next couple of 3 weeks with the sod webworms. Because with the little dingy moths, as you know, the life cycle there, they lay the eggs and the little worms hatch, and the worms literally eat the blades of grass. You can go out and walk in your yard on a Monday morning, and you're so very proud of it. On Tuesday morning, you've got these spots where these varmints are just chewing away at it. We've talked about how that's bad news, but it's also the good news part of that, if you can find anything, is that don't eat the roots of the grass. Remember, they only eat the blades, and so the grass generally will come back if you can stop the sod webworms from eating. And to do that, you need to spray. You need to spray with a liquid insect control that's labeled for St. Augustine grass for sod webworms, or a granular, either one. This time of year, with all the rain, a granular may not be a bad idea.
Okay.
Because you want to get it down there. And it's a little bit easier than mixing all that spray up. But either one, you've got to do it. I would recommend anybody listening with St. Augustine grass, go ahead and make their trip to their garden center or wherever, and go ahead and buy the material to do it. Because when you see them, you've got to react quick.
Okay, so walk me through when you walk out in your yard, you've got St. Augustine, you're living in this area, new.
That's right.
What do you look for immediately?
Right. Let's back up a whole step. You walk out into your yard and all the little moths are fluttering around. Don't panic, because you can have the moths and no worms. You know, you just get lucky.
This is like Mothman prophecies. I feel like we're walking through a horror movie. Okay, keep going.
Okay, so you go out there, and you got all the moths, and so that should at least alert you. This is St. Augustine grass now, for the most part. You walk out there, and there are the little moths. Now you really have got to be observant, and then watch it very closely, because the moths will lay the eggs, and here come the worms. I say in the next 30 days, you have to watch it so very closely, and you'll see the spots. And if you see the spots, this is really important. If you remember, we've talked about the philosophy of integrated pest management on the Garden Line, whereas if you see some damage from sod webworms, you need to treat it. But just if you see it in the front yard by the street, you don't need to spray the backyard by the back gate. Point is, spray just where you've got the problem. Come off maybe 10, 15 feet and go with it, and then just watch it closely to see if it crops up anywhere else. But you do need to be ready for that, because it can really damage your St. Augustine. And as I said, many times it'll come back, but it's not going to come back as you would want it this year. You may get some new growth, but it'll be next spring before it totally recovers.
So it's going to take some time to heal.
It's going to take some time to heal.
All right. That's
absolutely
encouraging.
So anyway, those are sod webworms. Look out for the little moths, and I think that's what you need to do. A couple other St. Augustine notes, Jenna, while we're on that topic. We always talk about midsummer, and kind of mentally, this is kind of midsummer, if you will, maybe a little later. We talk about the fertilization of St. Augustine. Remember blasting it with a high nitrogen? It loves that. Because we are here in August, I think it's time not to do that. I think it's, I wouldn't do it. A little late. It's just a little late. Because believe it or not, a lot of the books will tell you, and many people don't follow this, they wait till later. You get into late August and early September, a lot of the books will tell you, and a lot of the information from the state will tell you, put the winterizer fertilizer on, which, if you remember, has almost a total opposite formula of that high nitrogen we put on St. Augustine earlier. It only has 10% nitrogen versus, say, 16, 20, 22% of what we put on midsummer or even in the spring. The winterizer has a lot of potash in it, and all fertilizers have three numbers. The last number of winterizer is the largest of the number, because that fortifies the roots and gets it through the winter. You get into September and October, you're not really going to get a lot more green by putting high-powered nitrogen on there. It's just not going to do that much good for you. So wait. Don't do the high-powered nitrogen now when you're St. Augustine. Wait for the winterizer, late August, even September. But I think that's what I would do. And I got one more St. Augustine thing. Limestone. Since we're not putting the fertilizer on right now, it's a great time to get a soil test. But if you haven't put lime on your St. Augustine, oh, golly, let's say in the last couple of years, it's probably a good idea. All this rain has kind of washed things through. As you know, we have an acid soil here anyway.
Yep.
That's why azaleas and camellias do so well. That's why you've got Bellingraph Gardens in our area. That's why all that stuff looks so pretty. It's because all those plants, azaleas and camellias, et cetera, gardenias, like that acid soil. St. Augustine does not. It wants a neutral soil. So you've kind of got to sweeten it up a little bit. It's not a very scientific way to say it, but you got to sweeten it up with lime. And
okay.
So dolomite lime, granular dolomite lime. Those are important words. And a soil test will tell you how much to use. I've seen a lot of soil tests that would say 40 pounds per 1,000 square feet. That's a lot of lime. You may not want to use quite that much. But it's something you should go ahead and do, because you should never put the lime on when you're going to fertilize within 2 weeks. And we're not going to at this point. So it's a good time to put the lime on. So that's just a little bit of St. Augustine care here in early August.
Man, we're going to have some beautiful St. Augustine lawns here in Northwest Florida. And if you're tuning in or you see your neighbor needs some help, send them the podcast later on at newsradio923.com. I'm Jenna Barr. You're listening to the Pensacola Expert Panel. It's the Garden Line this beautiful, sunshiny Tuesday morning. You can always catch the Garden Line again on Saturdays at 9 a.m. here on News Radio 923. And you can text in your questions, 850-437-1620. When we come back after this short break, we're going to talk a little bit about getting rid of grapevines. So you're going to help a friend out this morning. We got some encroaching grapevines coming in to somebody's yard, and they're getting out of control. So we're going to talk about that when we come back.
Come away with me, and I will write you a song. Come away with me.
You're listening to the Pensacola Expert Panel. I'm Jenna Barr, 850-437-1620. If you'd like to text into the Garden Line this morning, we do have some questions coming in. We are going to get to them, I promise you. Let's first hop onto this question. Our friend says, how can I get rid of grapevines? They're as bad as, what is this?
Kudzu is a vine that is just wild, and it grows up into trees. And
oh, is that what those vines are that comes out of like that thick root?
Yeah, but this is, I'm talking about huge. I mean, they'll get up, you know, 40, 50 feet. I've seen some pictures out of Atlanta, for example, where it's horrible. It looks like monsters coming,
coming
out of the woods. And people have asked me over the years, what do I do about kudzu? I'm not so sure. Nobody's really solved that one.
I don't know. Maybe that's when you bring out the Roundup.
I know exactly what the person is talking about with those grapevines coming through.
Yeah, encroaching from like a little buffer area in the between yards.
And really the only thing I know chemically, I mean, other than digging these things up, which is tough, is a product. There are weed killers that are what we call selective and non-selective. Selective, of course, are what you'd use in your St. Augustine grass to kill dollarweed, because it selects the dollarweed, kills it, but doesn't kill the grass. Non-selective kills everything it touches. And there are two different kinds of non-selective herbicides. Some are systemic. They work right through the plant you're putting in, but won't damage adjacent plants. They won't leach to the other plants. But that's like Roundup. But what you may need for this is a product called Brush Killer. Brush Killer is what a lot of people use along fence lines to give scorched earth, if you will, for lack of a better word. Just kills everything. Kills everything. And it sterilizes the soil to some extent. Now, here in Northwest Florida, you're not going to get total bare ground forever.
No.
Things will come back, but very slowly. But Brush Killer will do it. You got to be very careful with it. Because it will leach to good plants, to trees, and everything else. But if you've got that grapevine, that's probably the best thing to use. If you can isolate your spray on the grapevine and not get it on anything else, or, quite frankly, adjacent to anything else. So that's probably the only solution I know other than manual labor, digging it up. So that's kind of the way that is. But the kudzu story, that's as bad as the armadillo story.
Oh, man. You know, it's the armadillo of weeds.
Yeah, boy, look up kudzu on the internet. You'll see some amazing pictures of that stuff. It just goes, it's crazy.
Like Tarzan weeds or Tarzan vines, I mean.
Wait a minute. That's a great analogy. Like, you could swing.
They could have just called it that.
Yeah,
I didn't know kudzu.
The kids could swing on it, absolutely.
I thought... Was it Kazoo? Isn't he our mascot at Blue Wahoos? Named it different.
Kazoo and Kudzu. Is it two different things?
Oh, my goodness. 850-437-1620. Ooh, how do I get a handle on crabgrass? So I've got a couple of pictures here, too. So two separate text messages come in wanting to identify a weed, which we identified as crabgrass. And then somebody else texts it in. How do I handle crabgrass?
Well, crabgrass, of course, is just an absolutely difficult plant to control. The best way to control crabgrass is with a pre-emergence. And we like to do pre-emergence in November and then again in February. Now, there are crabgrass killers out there that you can put on your yard. If this is a kind of a bare area and you've got crabgrass, you may want to consider, going back to what we just talked about, the selective herbicide that will kill the crabgrass but won't damage its adjacent plants. It would kill grass. It would kill St. Augustine, centipede, and all that. But you might want to do it that way. I have found some of the crabgrass killers that are on the market, I think will help you, but it's very difficult. The best thing, if you've got this in a lawn area, and as you know, crabgrass will mat up. It'll be like a doormat, thick, and that's all you've got is crabgrass there, is to dig it up as best you can. You got to go deep, because if you leave one molecule of that crabgrass, it'll come back. But maybe dig it up and then resod with good sod in that area. And that's not the easy way to control it, but it's the permanent way to do it. So you got rid of the crabgrass, new grass, and you're done. But some of your chemicals that you'll see on the shelf will tout themselves as total crabgrass killers, but I find it a very difficult weed to control. I like the pre-emergence control. That'll control a lot of other things too, but it's really good on them. Kind of a grassy weed, which crabgrass is, of course. Remember, if you have three different kind of weeds in the world, you've got grassy weeds, crabgrass being one of them, broadleaf weeds, which are dollar weed, and then sedges, nutgrass, if you will. Those are the three categories of weeds in the world, and the grassy weeds are really hard to control.
Yeah, sometimes just yanking them is best. If it's, I saw somebody,
but you
got to
get it all. But you got, you can't just, you know, rip, you know, just tear it off at ground
level.
Should
you recommend maybe right now? I mean, getting all the roots out as much as possible.
Oh, sure.
Because you can't use that pre-emergence.
That's
this
right.
Time,
now
right?
You could use, now if you can, if you've got a patch of crabgrass, let's say 3 feet in diameter, you can use Roundup. Use Roundup in there. And,
okay.
And it'll get it. But as we've always said here on the Garden Line, if you're going to use Roundup, do your research. Look at it closely.
Be
look
safe.
At the label. Look at the background of that chemical and be sure it's for you. Be sure it's one that you want to use. But it will work. One other thing, though, this is really interesting. I had a customer a long time ago had a tree, and he wanted to do a little bare area around the tree to kill weeds and grass that was growing next to the pine tree. Okay, so he sprayed Roundup around, oh, maybe a little 2 foot diameter around the tree, because Roundup it wouldn't hurt the tree. It's got to be an actively growing weed to kill. But what he didn't realize was his St. Augustine grass had sprigs growing up into those weeds right next to the pine tree. And because that Roundup was systemic, it went all the way through some of those sprigs, and he had lawn damage out 3 to 4 feet, if not further. So be real careful when you're using those type of things.
Absolutely. Be careful no matter what.
No, no question. And on that Roundup, so I'm going to say it one more time. It's so important. If you use something like that, I'm talking about gloves, long sleeve shirt, long pants, shoes. I mean, just take, I like,
all precautions.
Now, we all have masks around the house now.
Yes.
Wear your mask and some safety glasses. Just do everything you can to protect yourself.
One more thing before we take another quick break and head to the news after that. I wanted to ask you, is it the same recommendation for handling the torpedo grass?
Now, torpedo grass is almost a different breed of cat, I'll
okay.
tell you right now.
All right, so do we want to cover that later on then?
Well, maybe not.
Okay.
No, we can't. Because I really hate torpedo grass. It is so tough to get rid of.
Okay. Well, we'll cover that. Let's take another quick break so we don't run out of time. When we come back, we're going to head.
Express yourself. You don't never need help from nobody else. All you got to do now.
You're listening to The Garden Line here on the Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3. I'm Jenna Barr, 850-437-1620. We do have to take a short news break, catch up with Candy Cullerton in the newsroom, as well as get a Fox News update. But when we come back, we've got a couple of texts coming in about monkey grass.
Perfect.
More crabgrass.
More crabgrass.
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
and some torpedo grass.
And torpedo. So we've got all the grass and weed.
Here we are. It's early August. It's Pensacola.
Yeah.
That's what we do.
It's, but it's the weed that grows outside. So calm down. All right. Let's hop on over to Candy in the newsroom.
What do you think, Candy?
It's the weed that grows outside.
There you go. We can talk figs.
All the day long, hopping and a bopping and a singing his song. All the little birds on Jaybird Street love to hear the robin go tweet, tweet, tweet. Rockin' Robin, tweet, tweet, rockin' Robin, tweet, tweet. Blow rockin' Robin, cause we're really gonna rock up tonight.
It's monkey grass time here on the Garden Line.
Oh, boy, that's exciting.
Monkey grass.
All right, bring it on.
Well, we're going to talk torpedo grass. I don't like, honestly, I feel like, and Candy can't hear me right now, like we're talking, we walk into like, you know, your local weed supply and we're like, can I get some torpedo? Can I get the monkey grass? I'm cracking myself up.
Oh.
Kudzu.
This
it just all sounds
it's a
made
great
up
time
crazy.
Of year to have the garden line. It really,
this
really,
is a great time. No grass was involved in these questions. Okay. Well, in all seriousness, our friend says, I have tall monkey grass that's getting yellow strands in it. Do you have any idea what that is?
That could be that could easily be too much water, too much, you know, rain. There may be some standing water where that is happening. Generally, the monkey grass, and another name for monkey grass, of course, is liriope, that it loves the sun. I really like to use it, not necessarily as a border, but as a plant in the foreground of a bed. If you put it on like, let's say 1.5 to 2 foot centers, it does so well. And the liriope, the monkey grass, this time of year, has got the little purple blooms coming out of it. It really is pretty. Now, there's different types of liriope. My favorite is one, it's kind of an old-fashioned type called evergreen giant liriope. I have found, and this may answer the question that the texture said, really maintains its green color. Your traditional monkey grass liriope sometimes will yellow out like that with too much moisture, or even late summer, just the heat, if you will. A couple of other kinds of liriope you may want to think about. Mondo grass is a type of liriope. That's a miniature monkey grass. Very small, doesn't grow but 4 to 5 inches tall. It's really kind of cool to put in the foreground of a flower bed. And finally, there's Aztec grass, which is a type of liriope. You know where you can find Aztec grass, Jenna? When you walk out the front door, the studio.
Okay.
We have
Aztec
grass.
Look at me. I could identify that in the wild.
Yeah, take a look. It's a variegated. Variegated look. But the point is, I think we're dealing with maybe water and maybe a little excess heat, depending on where this monkey grass is. If it's next to the street or next to a sidewalk, it really gets hot this time of year. That could possibly make those yellow streaks. Now, in the wintertime, I'll get a lot of that. And in the winter, I'll cut mine back. There are people who have a lot of liriope that will literally run over it with a lawnmower, set the lawnmower real high and run in the winter, and then let it come back.
How you get revenge.
Do it one time. Don't get me wrong. I'm not recommending that we go out today and run over with a lawnmower. But because it does get a little winter look to it, but if you cut it back, it'll come back strong. It's a great plant. I'm not sure it's used enough in landscape because it's green. It's got that pretty purple bloom in the fall, like right now. And and it's really very hardy. So maybe we should use more of it.
Okay. I like it. Moving on from monkey grass, torpedo grass. I wanted to hit on that just because it came up in subject how to handle
it. And I was sort of hoping we were going to run out of time on our show.
So is torpedo grass.
Torpedo grass really is kind of the same philosophy that we had on the crabgrass.
Okay.
But it, to me, is double tough. Double tough. It is, if you dig up torpedo grass, the roots look like a bowl of spaghetti, a bowl of pasta. Mm. White roots that go everywhere. And sure enough, you can dig it up and get a lot of those roots out. But you leave some of those roots in the ground when you're weeding, that torpedo grass will come back. It is very, very hard to kill. And we could use some of the non-selective herbicides we talked about. Are really the selected ones that go for grassy weeds. But even at that, I'm not sure you're going to get it all, because it is the toughest weed there is.
Great.
I'm not being very optimistic about that one. Dig it up if you can, spray if you will, but keep in mind that you may have the problem down the line.
It might be just one of those reoccurring instances.
It's a tough one. It's a tough weed. It really is.
Does that generally grow in between, like, yards? Sometimes I'll notice it It comes from like another yard. It just creeps over.
You got to keep in mind that a weed is simply a plant in the wrong place. And so if you've got a nice lawn and you back up to, say, a lawn that's not so nice, and you've got some bare areas, that's where it's going to grow. It's going to grow in an area that that has water and probably fertilizer, and there's nothing else growing there. Here the weeds are going to come up. And so you've got to, that's why if it's a yard that's maybe next to yours, but if you can sod those areas with good grass and do all the cultural practices that we talk about on the garden line, you know, fertilization, mowing, watering, et cetera, that might stop you from having to fight some of these weeds on the border of a yard.
Okay, very good. So a little bit of struggle with some weed here, but that's all right. What about, I guess, so we have a friend, they have an 850 area code, but they're asking about the weed killer, quote unquote, Tordon. Do you know what that is?
I don't know Tordon.
Tordon.
I don't know that. Nowadays, there are a lot of different names for some of these chemicals. If we're talking weed killer, if it's a weed killer, generally, if you look at the real fine print, that it will contain a 2,4-D mixture. 2,4-D comes in different strengths. It's been around for a long time. It's a selective weed killer for the most part, insofar as killing dollarweed in St. Augustine. Not this time of year, but in the proper time. But a Tordon, I don't know. Look at that label real close, and if you can text us back, let us know what it says in that fine print, and maybe I can be a little more help. But I've never used that particular chemical.
Okay, very good.
But there are a lot of new ones out there. New ones come out all the time.
Yeah, and I feel like it's just that section continues to grow.
Oh, it does. And some of the old ones, some of these new ones are vast improvements over the old ones. They really are. I look at them, probably one of the classics, and this isn't a weed killer, is Volk oil. People used Volk oils since my grandparents' day to spray on plants in the spring and fall for scale and that type of thing. Well, ultrafine oil came along and replaced it, quite frankly, because ultrafine oil had a wider time frame in which you could use it. The Volk oil, the temperatures had to be just right, not too hot, not too cold. Ultrafine oil, that time frame was expanded. So that's why people use it. It's very very effective. But that's just an example of how chemicals, like everything else, evolves into better products. And with better products, there are more products. And Tordon probably is one of hundreds of new chemicals that are out there. I'm going to do a little research and see what's in it. How did they spell it? T-O-R-D-O-N?
So I'm getting us a couple of different spellings. A few people are trying to text in and help, too.
Okay.
Let me look into it. Let me go ahead and take a commercial break here on the garden line. I also want to get to a couple of questions about cherry laurels that are popping up in flower beds, as well as a fig tree question coming in from our friend Natalie. So we're going to get to that here on the garden line.
You want to be loved by anyone. It's not unusual. You want to have fun with anyone.
That Candy dancing in there?
We're tearing it up.
Oh yeah. Don't ask Mike to dance. Sorry. He's not. Oh, it's pretty ugly.
If it's better than our Elmer Fudd, then it's okay. Jenna Fudd, she's back. All right, we've got some questions coming in. Let me hop over to this. It's 9:49 on the garden line. Let's go back to Tordon. I've got 45,000 different ways to spell it.
I was just going to say, I cannot thank our listeners enough. They're helping us here on Tordon, which I did not know. They had different spellings. One person said T-O-R-D-O-N. One person said T-O-R-R-I-D-O-N, but I think the vote's in, and the majority are T-O-R-O-D-O-N. But one of our listeners said, wait a minute, said this is a chemical. This is not one you're going to spray on your St. Augustine grass. This is a stump killer and a tree killer. I guess if you're trying to kill a tree, you would kind of put you would get an axe and kind of cut little pieces into the trunk and pour the stuff in there. I guess I've never messed with this stuff before, but it doesn't look like it's a chemical that, quite frankly, many of us or many of our listeners would ever use, because it looks
maybe
like
major landscapers.
Yeah, be careful. You talk about chemicals. Remember the brush killer we talked about earlier in the show? Brush killer has on its label a stump killing recommendation. In other words, it is going to kill everything, and it's going to sterilize the soil, and it could easily leach to your good plants. So if you've got that Toradon at home, be careful. Read that label top to bottom.
Please.
But thank you all for your help. I really appreciate all these
calls. Okay, we got the final spelling.
Yeah, exactly.
It's T-O-R-D-O-N. Toradon herbicide.
T-O-R-O-D-O-N.
T-O-R-D-O-N. It's and it's non-carcinogenic, and it's been used to help dig up stumps and roots of shrubs and small trees. That I just looked it up. I decided, Dr. Google. Sorry, everybody.
No. That is.
They say to be careful still, even though it is classified by the EPA as non-carcinogenic. Still, be careful around animals, small children, and
elderly. They label it that, and that's great. It's labeled like that, but that doesn't mean it's not going to damage your other plants.
Exactly.
Because that stuff sounds like it's pretty strong.
Exactly. Let's talk fig trees here on the Garden Line. Our friend Natalie says, I've got a fig tree question. I've had a fig tree since 2020, and it hasn't grown at all. It's very small, maybe a foot tall. I call it my fig stick, and it has some green leaves, but it doesn't look sick, but it can't grow. So how do I get it to grow? Is it time to fertilize?
Well, I wouldn't fertilize it right now. No. I think springtime is a good time to fertilize that with generally a low nitrogen, high phosphate, potash situation. But one thing about, I don't know why it's not growing. You know what the old farmers used to do with fig trees? They planted them next to garages and next to houses, because I'm sure this was an urban legend that a fig tree really does well if its roots are shaded. So they would plant it next to buildings and that type of thing. So it got generally partial shade. I've always said full sun is good for a fig tree, but once again, if you follow some of those old farmers, they were generally right. It could be a variety problem also. If you really want a fig tree and you don't have one, you're going to go buy one. The one I like best, this is old-fashioned now, if you can still find it, a brown turkey fig. That was the name of the variety of the fig tree. And let me tell you one thing you do not ever, ever, ever want to do, and that is to take a weed feed fertilizer, which we don't like anyway here on the Garden Line.
Nope.
And if it got underneath the fig tree, even into the root zone of a fig tree, it will just affect those leaves. They'll get all mottled and variegated look, and it's hard. It really can adversely affect a fig tree. So you don't want to do that. But insofar as the one that she's got that does have leaves on it, a little fertilizer in the spring I think would help. And then maybe just give it some time. Sometimes it takes time for some of these trees, fruit trees especially, to let the roots get established. Once the roots get established, they'll shoot up and do fine. But it could be a variety problem. If whoever is texting us in knows the variety, you may check on its requirements for that particular variety. But keep in mind, brown turkey fig is a good one.
Brown turkey fig. Have you ever heard of putting oyster shells around it?
No, I haven't.
Homeopathic ways.
I was going to say, that might be worth a shot. I've never done that. But once again, if any of our listeners have,
I know some people use coffee grounds.
Oh, sure.
All kind of different
kind of home remedies for a lot of, their books have been written on, home remedies for in the gardening world. And a lot of them work. A lot of the natural fertilizers, that type of thing, are historically slow acting. It's not something that's going to be like you put a 16-4-8 fertilizer on there and you see some immediate action. It's going to be very, very slow. So even some of the old organic fertilizers, like cottonseed meal, for example, used forever on centipede grass, but it was very, very slow acting. It really was. So, oyster shell might work. Give it a shot.
Very cool. We do have to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to wrap up with a question from our friend Nancy about cherry lawyer. I'm never going to get it right. Cherry laurel tree shoots.
There you go.
All right. So
go for it.
Let's take a quick break here on the Garden Line. When we come back, Nancy, we'll get to your question.
When you dance,
9:57, we're wrapping up the Garden Line this morning. I want to get to two separate things real quick. Going back to Tordon, talking about how it can help you get rid of shrubs and stumps and small tree stumps as well. Our friend called in, and I didn't get a name, but drill three holes into the trunk and put it into the hole so it doesn't get into your lawn.
Well, that's,
I like that tip.
That's a great text, because we used to sell stump remover in a granular form, and that's exactly how to do it. You put some about 45 degree holes into the tree, various holes, pour that stuff in there, and that's mainly for stumps.
Okay.
It's mainly for stumps, and it's
called, can you use it on these cherry laurel tree shoots?
No, they're too small. They're too small. Would be a tree where you could drill holes, a stump,
so
in which you could drill the holes.
Pull these cherry laurels.
Pull them. That's all you can. They don't come out of the ground too bad. Cherry laurels are an interesting tree. They're all over the place in Pensacola.
Oh yeah.
And all things being equal, if you didn't know better, you'd say it's a great tree to have in your yard because it's evergreen, beautiful glossy leaves. But what you forget is the berries, the black berries, which are one. They go into your flower bed and pop up just like the texture told us, and they're just nasty. They really are. So cherry laurel trees are not the tree of choice in landscaping right now, but you know, a lot of people have them, but boy, they're nasty, and they are, I'm not going to call them invasive, that's my word, but they will pop up everywhere.
They're friendly. That's what they are.
Friendly versus invasive. That's Jenna.
That is my politically correct way of saying it.
And a great way to say it. Good for you. Good for you.
I'm trying my best over here.
Let me tell you, welcome back. It's great to have you back.
Thank you. It's good to be back together.
Yeah, exactly.
So tune in next week for the Garden Line. If you missed most of this episode, tune in Saturdays at 9 a.m. here on News Radio 92.3. And stay tuned. Bob Burgie's coming up next.